Ladies and gentlemen, a very good morning to you. Welcome to Tallahassee, to the legislature, and to the Florida Senate. We're excited to host some of our colleagues from the Florida House this morning. It's great to see you. We have coffee in the back in the new renovated Knott Building. If you haven't discovered it, please take advantage of it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Joint Committee, the Joint Select Committee on Collective Bargaining. I'm Aaron Bean. I'll be your chair as we embark on a ambitious agenda once again. If you're here to hear input, testimony on collective bargaining, I've got good news for you. Our agenda is chock full of it today. In fact, that's our sole mission, is to take input. This meeting, this committee was created by Speaker Sprouls and Wilton Simpson to do just that, to take input on where we stand on collective bargaining with various labor groups. They are here, and if you haven't already filled out a card, I see many of you have. We are going to be welcoming you to the podium. We ask that in the essence of others, to be fair, just to be concise and nice. How about that? That's a nice little term to go forward with it. We're going to call the roll in just a moment, but first I'd like to recognize our alternating chair, Representative Rodriguez, our partner in the Joint Select Committee bargaining. You've got an announcement or a thought, so you are recognized. Good morning.
Thank you, Chair. And I don't know that I have so much of a thought or an announcement, but I will say that I do want to state, first I want to recognize my colleagues from the House who are here today, and have, as well as the senators, who have stayed an extra day in Tallahassee to indulge this committee, but also want to say that Representative Casello is excused today, so I just want to put that on the record. He does have an excused absence, but we still have quorum even without him here today.
Very good. Without objection, we will excuse Representative Cassell. And you mentioned quorum. Let's be clear. What is quorum for this committee? It is three senators that have to be at this dais at all times. So if you have to get coffee, we have to do it in shifts, as well as four House members. So that is our magic numbers. And with that, let's begin our agenda. Our agenda is going to begin with a roll call first. Of course, that's what we're going to do. Good afternoon, Chair Gruters. We're glad to have you here. Let's have the roll call. Tamara, please call the roll.
Okay, Senate members, alternating chair, Senator Bean.
Here.
Senator Bradley.
Here.
Senator Gruters.
Here.
Senator Stewart.
Here.
Senator Torres.
Here.
House members, alternating chair, Representative Rodriguez.
Present.
Representative Alupis.
Here.
Representative Casello. Representative Garrison.
Here.
Representative Hawkins.
Here.
And Representative Rayner.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Fantastic. That's what we want to hear, so we can embark on our journey of listening of what's happening in collective bargaining. Our meeting will start with reports or comments from the Department of Lottery, followed by the Department of Management Services, and then a handful of folks from other bargaining units that are going to come and tell us what's going on in the world. First, let's have Mr. Michael Matamore coming to the podium. Mr. Matamore represents the Department of Lottery. Is that correct, Mr. Matamore?
That is correct.
Very good. Well, welcome. And you are recognized to talk on collective bargaining.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Rodriguez. Thank you, Chair Bean. Thank you, all members of the committee. I'm pleased to announce that of the two units, bargaining units, that are at the lottery, we are only apart on wages, so everything else is resolved. Negotiations are ongoing, and we hope to have a successful resolution and maybe not even have an impasse resolution. We have offered to all employees of the lottery an amount of money for retention, compression, and pay inequities. That amount is $1,452,000. And for the purposes of addressing compression that may have resulted from the $13 increase this past summer, we have direction to look at the salaries closest to $13, newer employees versus long-term employees, so seniority that may have inequities as of seniority, first and level supervisors and the people that they supervise, and then competitive pay and inequities. So that's something that we've offered for all employees. For the law enforcement officers that work at the lottery, we have offered a 20% increase for each eligible entry position and a 25% increase to non-entry level sworn police officers. So that's what's on the table. Negotiations are ongoing. And if anyone has any questions, that's all I have.
Very good, Mr. Matamore. Thank you so much. Mr. Matamore, tell me your company. I know you're an attorney.
Yes.
And where do you work, or who do you represent? Or
I'm with the law firm of Allen Norton & Blue, labor in Florida, labor.
Okay. Very good. And we're going to get the sergeant's office just to kind of look at that. He's already on it, so we're on the sergeant's office. So thank you for coming. Are the questions of Mr. Matamore dealing with the Department of Lottery? Hearing none, we'll go right in. Guess what? You represent the Department of hold that thought. We're going to come back to you because you're going to give us a report in just a few minutes, I believe.
Well, actually, I believe Ms. Larson is going to appear on behalf of the Department of Management Services.
Very good. Mr. Matamore, thank you so much for coming forward today. We appreciate your input. Sharon Larson is here. She is here to talk about the Department of Management Service. Ms. Larson, welcome, and you are recognized. Tell us, are you with the department? Who do you work with?
Yes, sir. I am. Thank you, Chair Bean and Chair Rodriguez and members. My name is Sharon Larson. I am the Director of the Division of State Human Resource Management at the Florida Department of Management Services. And the department, through my division, represents the governor as the public employer for the state personnel system and collective bargaining. Our role before the committee today, as you said, Chair, is to provide information on the status of negotiations with regard to the state personnel system. Negotiations are ongoing and will continue until impasse is resolved by the legislature. And hopefully we will continue to make progress in our negotiations and resolve some of the issues that will be discussed today. If the committee will allow, I would like to reserve just a few moments after the employee organizations complete their presentations, if needed, to answer any questions or to clarify our positions. So just some general overview comments. There are 13 collective bargaining units in the state personnel system. Four of these units are under one master contract, which means we negotiate a total of 10 collective bargaining agreements. All of these are multi-year agreements that expire in June of 2023. So current negotiations are for the last year of these current contracts. Since this is a reopener year, the parties have a limited number of articles that they may open for negotiation. We're pleased to report that for all 10 units, the parties have reached tentative agreement on insurance benefits. The governor has proposed that insurance benefits and employee premiums remain unchanged. This is a significant offer as the state agrees to absorb any additional costs related to our current insurance benefits without an increase to the employee share of premiums. Overall, wages and a total of 10 non-economic issues remain under negotiation. And I will touch upon those issues and also briefly summarize the governor's wage proposals, which are in addition to the standard pay provisions offered each year and funded from existing agency budgets. As you will see, the governor is offering a very significant pay package with regard to these units. As Mr. Matamore mentioned, of note, on July 1st, 2021, at the legislature's direction, the state personnel system's minimum wage increased from $8.65 per hour to $13 per hour, resulting in an increase of $4.35 per hour for all positions paid at the previous minimum wage. Included in all of the governor's individual unit pay proposals are funds to address salary compression, retention, and pay inequities. These adjustments will take into account, one, the current salary levels of employees who were closest to the new $13 per hour minimum base rate that will need to be adjusted to ensure adequate ratios between pay bands are maintained. Second, salaries of newer employees against long-term employees in the same types of positions. Third, salaries of employees compared against their direct supervisors and second-level supervisors. And finally, the competitive pay structure to remedy pay inequities. Many of the governor's wage proposals also contain additional provisions to address recruitment and retention. So now I'd like to go into each of the unit proposals. Starting first with the AFSCME unit. There are four collective bargaining agreements under that master contract. Those units include administrative and clerical, operational services, human services, and professionals. Only two issues remain at impasse. The union has proposed to add a new article titled telecommuting that would link the statute regarding telework to the contract. Telework is a management tool that's outlined in Section 110-171 that's used at the agency's discretion when both the work and the employee skill set support the efficient and effective completion of the work or delivery of the agency services through that structure. The statute does not provide an employee right to a telework arrangement. Our position is that the union's proposal is unnecessary, as the union can otherwise communicate information with regard to that statute to their members, and the inclusion of a proposed article in the contract would only invite grievances on what is currently a management right. With respect to wages, Article 25, as we mentioned, the minimum hourly rate of pay of $13 went into effect on July 1st, 2021, and that has already benefited many members of the AFSCME units. And as previously mentioned, the governor's wage proposal includes funding to address related compression, retention, and pay inequities for this unit, and it also proposes new minimum salaries for targeted positions and programs within the Department of Juvenile Justice, the Department of Children and Families, the Department of Revenue, and the Agency for Healthcare Administration. The total value of the governor's wage proposal for AFSCME unit employees is $222,837,000. With regard to the professional health care unit, represented by the Florida Nurses Association, we are at impasse on three articles: discipline, hours of work, and differential pay. The state's proposal is that we maintain the status quo for those articles, which means we continue with the current language that's in the contract for that. With respect to wages, as mentioned, the governor's wage proposal includes funding to address compression, retention, and pay inequities. The total value of the governor's wage proposal for the professional health care unit is $7.1 million. Moving on to the fire services unit, represented by the Florida State Fire Association, only two issues remain at impasse. Article 29 related to health and welfare. Again, the state's proposal is that we remain at status quo. We believe the current contract language is appropriate and sufficient. With respect to wages, the governor's wage proposal provides the funding for to address pay compression, retention, and pay inequities for all unit members. And further, if the compression adjustment does not bring the unit member's salary up by at least $2,500, additional funding is provided to make up the difference. It should also be noted that the fire services unit is proposing a wage parity clause with law enforcement, which means that they would be guaranteed the same increase that would be received by the law enforcement units. We oppose this because it would chill and interfere with the negotiations with that comparator unit, and there are also legal concerns regarding such a provision in the contract. The total value of the governor's wage proposal for the fire service unit is $2,860,000. For the special agents unit, which is represented by the Fraternal Order of Police, two issues remain. Article 23 related to workday, workweek, and overtime. We are proposing that we maintain the status quo, the current language that's in the contract. The union is proposing that we convert the extended work period that public employers are permitted to use for law enforcement officers under the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act from 160 hours over a 28-day period to 80 hours over a 14-day period. The Federal Fair Labor Standards Act permits such extended work periods in recognition of government employers' needs to prudently manage overtime costs. We oppose this change because it cuts in half the amount of time that the agency has to offset overtime and to mitigate its fiscal liabilities. With respect to wages, the governor's proposal includes the funding to address compression, retention, and pay inequities. And in addition, the governor has proposed a 20% increase to the base rate of pay for all unit members. Those are our special agents and our special agent trainees. The total value of the governor's wage proposal for special agents is $6,300,000. Moving on to the Florida Highway Patrol, represented by the Florida Police Benevolent Association. Only two issues remain at impasse. Article 15 related to seniority. The union is proposing a new definition for break in service, changing that from 31 days to one calendar year. That proposal is still under review. With respect to wages, the governor's wage proposal again includes the funding to address compression, retention, and pay inequities. And in addition, the governor has proposed a 20% increase to the base rate of pay for Florida Highway Patrol troopers and a 25% increase to the base rate of pay for Highway Patrol sergeants, pilots 1 and 2, corporals, and investigative sergeants. The total value of the governor's wage proposal for the Florida Highway Patrol is $29,800,000. Moving on to law enforcement, also represented by the Florida Police Benevolent Association. We are at impasse on Article 7 related to internal investigations, Article 18, hours of work, and Article 24, on call. Again, the state is proposing that we remain at status quo and continue the current language in the contract. With regard to wages, the governor's wage proposal includes the funding for compression, retention, and pay inequities. And the governor is also proposing an increase to the base rate of pay for entry-level law enforcement positions and 25% for non-entry-level law enforcement positions. The value of the governor's wage proposal for the law enforcement unit is $28 million. For the security services unit, represented by the Florida Police Benevolent Association, the only pending issue is wages. The governor's wage proposal includes the funding to address compression, retention, and pay inequities. And in addition, the governor has proposed a minimum base rate of pay of $41,600, the equivalent of $20 per hour, for correctional officers, sergeants, lieutenants, captains, correctional probation officers, and senior probation officers. And in addition, a step retention plan for correctional officers, sergeants, lieutenants, captains, correctional probation officers, senior probation officers, supervisors, and senior supervisors that pays $1,000 at 2 years, $1,500 at 5 years, and $2,500 at 8 years. For unit members in the Department of Children and Families and the Agency for Persons with Disabilities, the governor has proposed an increase of 20% for Institutional Security Specialist 1, and 25% increase for Institutional Security Specialist 2 and Institutional Security Specialist Supervisors. The total value of the governor's wage proposal for the Security Services Unit is $171,778,000. I did want to note that the wage proposal submitted to the committee by the Security Services Unit is not the last proposal that was submitted to the Department of Management Services for bargaining purposes. Therefore, it is going to be necessary for that latest proposal from the union to be costed, and we will provide you that information as soon as we have those numbers for you. Finally, we have 3 collective bargaining units for employees in the selected exempt service, and the only pending issue with regard to those 3 units is wages. Starting first with the attorneys unit, represented by the Federation of Physicians and Dentists. The governor's proposal includes the funding to address compression, retention, and pay inequities. And in addition, he has proposed increases to the minimum base rate of pay for targeted attorney positions in programs within the Department of Children and Families, the Department of Health, and the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. The total value of the governor's wage proposal for attorneys is $5,325,000. With regard to the physicians unit and the supervisory non-professional unit, also represented by the Federation of Physicians and Dentists, the governor's wage proposal includes the funding to address compression, retention, and pay inequities, and the total value of the governor's wage proposal for in-unit physicians and non-professional supervisors is $2.1 million and $1.9 million, respectively. In summary, the combined value of the governor's proposed pay package as it relates to the state personnel system is $477 million, almost a half of $1 billion. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my remarks, and I would be happy to take any questions.
Ms. Larson, thank you so much. I don't see any questions, but thank you so much. Sounds like progress is being made. We're going to hear from the other side.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Very good. Let's hear from those collective bargaining units. Up first will be Hector Ramos, followed by Michael Brennan. Hector Ramos, I believe, represents the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Come on down, Hector. We're glad to have you here. You live in Tarpon Springs.
Yes, sir.
And we appreciate you coming in. You're recognized.
Good morning, Honorable Chairman Bean, Honorable Chairman Rodriguez, and members of the committee. I am Hector Ramos, Director of AFSCME Council 79 Regions 2. Over 50,000 state workers need your help in these trying times. Council 79 has stood before this committee for too many years without once reaching an agreement. This year we thought it would be different. We expected it to be different, and we certainly hoped it would be different. The governor came out, as you all know, and expressed his understanding of the needs of state workers. He set aside $225 million for state employee salary increases in his proposed budget. He specifically stated this was separate and apart from the monies he requested for law enforcement and for bonuses for those that work in education. Wanting to reach an agreement and be reasonable, we put forth four items on the table. We settled on health insurance. We withdrew our proposal on recall rights to try and get to an agreement, but we stayed at impasse over telecommuting and wages. Telecommuting. This has been an important tool for the state during this pandemic in providing uninterrupted service to Floridians. The legislature established the criteria in Florida under Statute 110.171. The union has proposed the link to be in the contract to ensure uniformity throughout the state, but more important, to dispel misinformation among employees that have been formed over telecommuting. Something as easy as placing a link in the contract, something we have done before. If you take a look at our contract under Article 14, Performance Review, there's the link that for the law that you guys passed concerning performance review, was rejected. This link would help employees understand the limitations of telecommuting and dispel countless misconceptions as we move forward in adapting and working during these pandemic times. The clause simply stated, telecommuting shall be conducted in accordance with Florida Statute 110.171, which may be found at, and the link. This does not create entitlement among employees, because in your wisdom, when you created the law, it states that it is at management's discretion to have telecommuting. So we need this link because there's just too much misconception out there. Wages. We all know the times we are living through. State employees, as Speaker Sprouse spoke the other day, quote, haven't kept up with inflation, and this is before the Biden inflation, end quote. The State Committee on Government Oversight and Accountability, chaired by Senator Bradley, the other day heard testimony from the Chief of Staff of DJJ, Secretary of DMS, Deputy Director of Budget Planning for the Agency of Persons with Disability, and the Secretary of Florida Department of Corrections. And they all stated problems that they're having with vacancies, turnovers, burnouts. They can't get people in the door because of the wages. State workers are weathering the pandemic and have tackled the increased workload. We stepped up to the plate in dealing with unemployment issues, with vaccination programs, with school shutdowns, and have demonstrated, in fact, for the state of Florida to function, we serve and serve the citizens, we are the essential workers. Last year, we were excluded from any bonus that was given out, having the same economic needs as law enforcement and teachers and others that received the bonus. Our families need food, they need shelter, they have to pay for gas, and inflation is killing us. We continue to do more and work with less personnel. In our proposal, we are asking for a 4.5 increase. This comes out, and using DMS's own figures, to $107 million. And that includes employer-related costs, like the extra contribution to Social Security, FRS, et cetera. As you could see, this is much less than what the governor placed in his proposed budget for wage increases. DMS proposed the other $33.8 million, which we accepted and have no problem, as they have targeted jobs that are hard to fill, and those jobs must be filled. Thus, the union's total economic cost with the addition of what DMS proposed comes to $140.8 million, leaving $84.2 million of the governor's $225 million proposal to use for other needs as the legislature decides. Now let's take a look at DMS proposal. Besides the $33.8 million, which we accepted, they also proposed $184.9 million, and if you check their package, page 46 of their package, we asked for details on this proposal. How is the $184.9 million going to be used? They had no clear answers. They did mention that not all workers would receive an increase, including those low-paying workers that were raised to the new state minimum of $13 an hour for state workers. So, $184 million, not everybody to receive a worker, and those that went up to $13 are going to be penalized. That's what they proposed. They did mention, however, that supervisors had to receive a raise because due to compression. On compression, we have asked DMS to sit down at the table for us to come up with a formula to deal with compression. They have rejected, they have not met with us, they have not provided the information to deal with compression. But basically, their plan, no exact plan has worked out. It became apparent that their basic intention or result was to deny the state workers the bulk of the money Governor DeSantis proposed and earmarked for wage increases. This committee should report to Senate President Simpson and House Speaker Sprouse that the governor's intention and committee to state employees must be and should be met and not taken lightly. The final budget should include the 4.5 increase the union has proposed across the board, which comes out to $107 million, the link to State Statute 110.171 be incorporated in the contract to provide clear information as to the telecommuting law. We ask that this committee start the process of making career service employees whole for the losses in purchasing power, quality of life, and sacrifices they have endured, not just in the past, but they are currently going through. Any questions?
Hector, thank you so much for coming forward. Senator Torres, you have a question for Hector Ramos. You're recognized.
Good morning, Hector. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr.
You've been here every session. Question I have is, do you know the amount of money that they spent on contract services?
No, I don't.
You have no idea?
No.
Okay. I'll ask that later on. Thank you.
10-4, thank you. Hector, thank you so much for coming forward all the way from Tarpon Springs.
Thank you.
Up next is Michael Brennan. Michael represents the Florida State Fire Service Association. He'll be followed by Jose Diaz for nurses. Okay, very good. And very good. You're also with Richard Swilla. Very good. From Orlando.
I have a fun time trying to pronounce it.
Okay, no worries. He's here. You're from Palm Coast. Thank you for making that drive in. And Richard's from Orlando. You are giving us the perspective from the Florida State Fire Services Association. Welcome, and you're recognized.
Thank you. Chairs, members, thank you for spending your Friday morning here. I know you guys were probably looking to go home, but thank you very much, especially in the coldness up here. My name is Mike Brand. I'm the current president of the Florida State Fire Service Association. We represent six state agencies of firefighters throughout the state. As far as our negotiations this year, we proposed two articles. One, we got no feedback from the state. They just want to remain status quo. I will address that one, which is Article 29 for the health and welfare. Article 25, which is the wages portion, due to legal concerns to language that was our concerns, I'm going to allow our legal counsel to address that one for you if you're okay.
Proceed. Richard, welcome. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you. It's glad to be back. I'm glad to be back. I'm going to talk about Article 25, wages, and a couple of portions of that article. We have proposed, as you have seen, to strike a couple of sections, parts of a couple of sections, Section 3 and Section 4, which make the wage increases and the adjustments contingent upon a third party, you're doing something in the future. Before I get to that, I want to give you a real short background about how impasse resolution works. You guys get pulled into this hearing, and oftentimes in my experience over the last 10, 15 years of doing these hearings, it's not clear that everybody knows how impasse resolution works. The way it works is the employer makes a proposal, that's the governor, and then you resolve the dispute if there's not an agreement. So you are here today to resolve the dispute. And the way, of course, it really works is the legislature as a whole resolves the dispute. But the governor is out of the picture, technically, under the law. So we are proposing to remove some surplusage in Section 3 and Section 4. And the language is in Section 3, the reference to the General Appropriations Act, which is how we're getting money to the folks via the General Appropriations Act, but it has no business being in the collective bargaining agreement. What you need to do is put in the collective bargaining agreement that you are going to, or the contract is going to provide X number of dollars to the employees. It's got nothing to do for purposes of the collective bargaining agreement with the General Appropriations Act. There's no reference needed in it. It's not contingent on what's in the collective General Appropriations Act. So just remove the surplusage in Section 3 and Section 4 as it relates to the employer's recommendation. The fact that the employer has used this device, which of course is the only device he has to communicate a request to you. So just take out that language and just provide, for example, in Section 4 that employees in the bargaining unit will receive $2,500. Just simple. Remove the unnecessary language in Section 3 and Section 4. Now, in Section 6 of Article 25, we have proposed what is referred to as a parity clause, or more sometimes referred to as a Me Too provision. And there have been words floating around in the paramilitary world, which includes the bulk of the people represented by my client, the fire folks, that people in the law enforcement world are going to be the beneficiaries of all sorts of potential down the road benefits. We want those benefits. We don't think it's appropriate that one group in the paramilitary world, forgive me for using that terminology, it's just is what I do representing the firefighters and cops all over the state. But if our proposal is, and I'm going to read it if you don't mind, that if any current or newly hired state law enforcement employees receive compensation increases of any kind over and above what they're going to get in this contract, but going forward from the contract, if they receive anything going forward, in the form of performance pay, compression pay, pay increases, retention bonuses, important, hiring bonuses important, greater than the compensation provided to unit employees for the existing LEOs, unit employees that we are going to receive. If they get something over and above that down the road, let's say to retain employees, We would like to see the same. And in fact, the contract language provides for that. And that's what the rest of the proposal provides in Section 6 of Article 25. And there was a reference to that. Sharon made a reference to that earlier, some concerns about its legality. Well, we, our firm, has litigated the legality of parity clauses in the state of Florida in the city of Gainesville. It is a permissive subject of bargaining, and it is something that you guys can, as part of the larger legislative body, address and put in our contract, and we respectfully request that you do so. I will sit down, and Mike will get up and talk about a real important issue, the cancer.
Thank you, Richard. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you, sir. So another article that we put in for was Article 29 for health and welfare. We actually made this proposal several years ago during the same year that we had, luckily, the awesomeness of you, the legislature, finally coming to an agreement after almost 13 years of negotiations, bargaining, chit-chatting, and got a cancer presumption bill for the state of Florida, which was great, especially for the firefighters. The problem we ran into is when that bill got proposed and when it actually became law, they were supposed to come up with a committee of best practices, which was going to be overseen by the Department of Financial Services, State Fire Marshal's Office, and ourselves, along with the Florida Forest Service, which is my wildland firefighters, totally different type of firefighting, were supposed to be part of this group, because wildland firefighting versus structural firefighting is an entirely different operation. Number one, structural firefighters, they have gear, which I happen to be, used to be one of them after 30 years. We have gear that have barriers that help us protect from some of the stuff that we get into. We also have SCBAs to sit there and help protect our breathing. Guess what Florida Forest Service and wildland firefighters don't have? They don't have the barriers. They don't have air masks that they sit there and utilize on a regular basis. So they are consistently exposed to cancer-producing smoke. Now, a lot of folks want to say, oh, come on, it's wood. It's no different than a campfire. Folks, the woods fires that they're fighting are typically, if not started by them for actual taking down the wildfire threat, the ones that they're responding to are in areas of illegal dumping. Lord only knows what's actually burning within that fire. It's usually dumped chemicals, dumped plastics, so they're exposed to this stuff without their breathing apparatus and without the clothing themselves to sit there and protect them with the barrier. The problem we have right now is, unfortunately, because we got cut out of that committee, we had one notification of a meeting from that point forward, heard nothing. No notification from the Florida Forest Service. They got nothing. We got nothing. We never got to fully participate within that committee that to develop best practices. Well, they've developed best practices. The problem is it's going to bankrupt the Florida Forest Service if you're going to try and put structural firefighting, cleaning, cancer prevention stuff into the Wildland Forest Service. That's why we needed to be there. As of right now, the Florida Forest Service has no operating procedures, no cancer prevention activities or standard operating procedures whatsoever. My members are still required to take their contaminated clothing home in their personal vehicles and wash it in their personal washing. So guess who else we're exposing to those carcinogens? Their family members. They have the possibility of being getting cancer basically from these items. So with this personal cancer safety, one of the things we were always asking for was what is generally known out there, there's different avenues for it, but is life scan. Everybody pretty much knows what life scan is. It's the biggest one out there. And this is every 24 months, at least every 2 years, we would like for our members to be able to sit there and have a comparative life scan survey, which is basically they're checking the firefighters for cancer, for issues that may crop up when it's treatable. Now, luckily, I will say this, the Florida Forest Service is already doing this, thank goodness, and it has actually saved four of my members within the last 3 years. They were found to sit there and have cancer, early stages. They were able to have surgery to either remove it or be able to sit there and have the cancer treatments needed to basically get rid of it. And as of right now, they're still cancer-free. Love it. Problem is, I represent six state agencies worth of firefighters. Now, granted, some are fire inspectors, some are aircraft, some are rotary, but it doesn't matter. Everybody is exposed through their service to these carcinogens, and we would like to see that provision put in there that they get this benefit to sit there and have the early detection so that they can maintain service to the state, to the citizens, while still being able to sit there and maintain for their families and live a prosperous life. The other part of this provision, again, comes back to try and help the Florida Forest Service. We want to work with them. We've been trying to work with them. But apparently, with the way that their budgeting is, I always get told, well, we can't buy washers and dryers. It's not within our provisions of our budget to sit there and purchase these items. We've never asked for a washer and dryer at every ranger station. We realize that is going to be totally astronomical, and it's not beneficial even to the state because some of these ranger stations aren't fully manned 24/7. But we would like to see the Florida Forest Service have the ability to purchase washers and dryers so that the clothing that is contaminated gets cleaned there, not taken home, not exposing their family members, but into a central location, which can typically either be their maintenance office or their central regional office, where washers and dryers are available to them for the cleaning of this material. That's all we're basically looking for within this provision. As far as wages, the only thing I kind of want to step back to in reference to the wages, real briefly, you all are fully aware, because I know you guys are probably even on your guys' salary. You notice especially where we have lost no cost of living. It's not been done in the state of Florida for many, many years. The performance pay increase that you actually see that's in everybody's contract, here's the problem, at the discretion of. I recently left state service last month and went out into the private sector because after 10 and a half years, 8 years straight, making exemplary performance and asking for performance pay increases, guess what my answer was? Bye. Thank you. No. And I'm not the only one. This is going on with a lot of your state employees because of that provision at the discretion of. Along with that, as you see, the cost of living, especially down in South Florida, I know some of my representatives here from South Florida, along with my senators as well, excuse me, both sides, where's the housing market gone? 200, 300, 400% markup. Yet where's the salaries gone? Nowhere. I have areas down there, especially through the State Forest Service. We can't get people. There's over 140 plus positions haven't been filled in over 2 years. Why? Because nobody can live down in South Florida on the pad. You just can't.
Michael Brandon, any other thoughts? I know it's expensive.
That's all I basically want to bring to you. Those are the reasoning why. If you have any questions in reference to what it is.
Michael Brandon, we appreciate your service and your team's service. We appreciate you. Thank you for coming forward today. Linda Stewart, did you have a question before we get to the additional speakers that wish to speak that I'm worried that we may not have enough time? It's a quick question, you go right ahead. Senator Stewart.
The life scan survey and the washer and dryer, what is the cost to the state for that request?
Because we've never been able to get anybody to come and actually sit at the table to have a full-on discussion as to where we would place these items and how many stations it would be, I can't give any cost at this point in time.
Michael Brandon, thank you so much. Linda Stewart, it's a good question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jose Diaz is going to be here, and he is coming now to the podium. Jose is here to talk about state nurses. Jose Diaz, not a stranger to this committee or these hallways. Good morning, and you're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Chairman Rodriguez. I represent OPIU, which is the bargaining unit for the Florida Nurses Association, our state health nurses and healthcare workers. They asked me to just let you know that we apologize that our leadership could not be here personally, but but as frontline healthcare workers, in an abundance of caution to not expose anyone here and to not expose themselves to something that then they may inadvertently take back to one of their facilities, they chose not to travel.
We understand completely.
They did meet with some of you virtually over the last couple of days, and they have delivered their packet via email to all to the committee with their positions, and they just asked for your support on their position on the impasse. Thank you.
Very good. Well done. Jose Diaz, no questions for you, but we'll see you in the hallway. William, is it Santra? William, come on in. I know you're here to talk about Florida Highway Patrol, and I know you're from Tallahassee. Tell us, is it, you could have been a doctor with your handwriting.
Thank you. I wouldn't be standing here if I was a doctor.
Amen, brother. Is it Santra?
No, sir, it's Smith.
Smith. Well, there you go. How about that? So
that's okay. And actually, I work in Miami-Dade County. I'm a trooper. I've been there for 38 years and currently still employed as a trooper.
Amen. Mr. Smith, I'm going to pass this around to the committee and let them take so I understand. But thank you for making that drive all the way here, and thanks for your service. And tell us from your perspective what's happening in the bargaining in your area.
Well, appreciate the time. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that we don't think that the governor's proposal, it's historical. In the last 38 years that I've been employed, there's never been a recommendation by a governor. No slight on the past governors, but he has stepped up and gone above and beyond for the amount of money that he's offering. Our suggestion, it just goes the next step. It fixes compression. And we developed a career development plan, which, ironically, Department of Management Services, like previously spoken, stepped up in the previous committee and talked about where we're losing people across state employers, how long they stay, so on and so forth. We developed this plan almost a year ago, and it's ironic. It's almost a mirror image of what's going on in the state. Right now, we only have 1,116 troopers to cover 67 counties, 24/7, 365. When you look at that, we have about 17 million licensed drivers in this state, not counting our visitors that come. If you go back to 2019, that's 126 million people that visit, or about 10 million people a month. And 90% of them get here by driving. The rest fly, and they're about 86% of those are domestic, so they're from within the continental United States. So when you start adding those numbers up, it gets overwhelming, because right now we have about one trooper per 17,000 licensed drivers on average. And then the motor vehicles are about the same. Orlando notoriously holds calls. Yesterday they held 12 calls, which means we had 12 probably residents standing on the side of the road for 3.5 hours because we just didn't have the personnel to cover it. But our career development plan fixes a lot of this. It fixes our compression in the first year, and then, like we all know, each year has to be voted on by the legislature on increasing or funding our step pay plan or career development plan, because there's an element there that has to be met before you would move up. And it's every 2 years, not every year. So it lowers the cost significantly. It addresses compression. It gives troopers insight to where they are going to be years down the road so they don't look for better paying jobs. And it's competitive. It's not number one. We didn't go out and try to be the highest paid in the state of Florida. We looked at other states, Texas, California, New York. And also, if you look in the packet, there's one there for Delaware. Delaware is the size of Polk County. It actually only has 200,000 more people than there is in Polk County. So there's about 900,000 in Delaware. There's 720,000 in Polk County. And usually, on average, we have three troopers out in Polk County. So when you start looking at those type of numbers, we're significantly understaffed. But our career development plan approaches that. It gives troopers hope, gives them a future, and insight, incentive to stay, because now they can look down the road and see where they're going to be at X amount of years of their service, and there's no reason to leave. or to go to other agencies. Even though they're staying within the state, they're not with the state agencies. Our plan is just a little more money than what the governor's offering, and we have a funding source that it's money. DHSMV brings in about $2.5 billion. We just want to hold 1.5 of that goes to DOT for roads. We got really nice roads in Florida. We're working on them. They are. But they become racetracks. People out there are out of control. And it's getting worse and worse. The roads are nice and flat and smooth. And what do you do on a nice, flat, smooth road? You go faster. So that's one of the problems it generates. But we don't have the people to cover it. But all we do is we just want to hold back the money that would be funding this career development plan that goes to DOT, which is about $1.5 billion. The Highway Patrol and DHSMV's budget's about $506 million. The other $500 million is disseminated across many education and a lot of other places. But in a sense, in a nutshell, that's what we're asking for. Like I said, it's just a little above and beyond what the governor is offering. Again, it's historic what he's offering, and we really appreciate that, just like we appreciate the support from the Florida legislature when it comes to law enforcement. But I'm not going to take
it. No, Mr. Smith, we appreciate your service. It sounds like we're close on your area, so that's good news. And thank you for telling these House members to slow down on our state roads. So,
oh, it's not the Senate doesn't speed, right?
Yeah, no, we are always I'm right there with you. There may be a question, Representative. Yeah, you're...
I got a ticket from a trooper the other day.
Okay. Speak in the microphone and tell everybody that. So go right ahead. You're recognized.
I'm going to slow down. I just got a ticket in Columbia County the other day from a very nice gentleman, but I just got a ticket.
Well, I'm glad he was polite.
Yes, I'm a seatbelt infraction away, as my father says, state of Florida taking my license, but it's fine.
Amen. Thank you for sharing, Representative.
It's a good hippies. Good hippies.
Yeah, no doubt. Mr. Smith, thank you. Again, I'm totally sincere when I say thank you. And for anybody that's stranded on the road, that color scheme of the car, that is, I think have we trademarked that color scheme, or we protect
it? For the most part, actually, it is in statute.
Very good. So, but that is a welcome sight to anybody that needs assistance. We just appreciate what you do.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, members.
Very good. Up next, James Barriardi, representing the Florida PBA. It says he's from Tallahassee, but I see him, as we all do, all over the state. He's here to give us his take on what's going on. Jimmy, welcome to back to the committee.
Well, thank you, Senator Bean, and it's a great day in the state of Florida. I want to be a little bit more positive than some that we've heard today. Our negotiations are going fairly well. As a matter of fact, better than they have in several years, and that took some effort from both sides, and I'm thankful for that. We actually settled everything this year except for wages, and like the Highway Patrol, we're actually not far behind. We're thankful for the governor. We're thankful for this body. Correctional officers had a tough year's a run, and the way we look at it, it wasn't until two people stepped forward, Senator Rob Bradley a few years ago and House Member Chuck Cummins, that really brought to light the plot of correctional officers and the pay. It's very important that we fix the pay problem for corrections, and this is not a problem that anybody sitting here today has created. And I know most of you pretty good. I know if you had the chance years ago or had ability to go back in time, you would fix what happened to them officers. And I sincerely believe that. But we have to fix it. I think what happens with correctional officers, unlike some of the other law enforcement groups, we become victims of our numbers. There's a lot of prisons throughout the state. There's minimum staffing in prisons that we're supposed to have, but we don't have today. And so to treat them fairly and pay them for their worth, it looks like a big lift to everybody. But as we've seen in other states, corrections and keeping some people behind bars is very important. There's some states I won't go into because some of their policies on releasing people early, and we've seen what happened to the crime there and everything else. Correctional officers play an essential role in the law enforcement process. We're an important part of it. Just to give you some real quick facts right now, Right now, there's about one correctional officer to every 150 to 200 inmates. That's, and I've done this for 30 years, I have 30 years experience, that's a scary number. Currently, right now, about 30 to 35%, and it changes by day, but the average number is about 30 to 35% vacancy rates. So correctional officers are covering double, coming in on their days off, working extra on holidays. I know most of you have visited prisons. It's become the popular thing. I am so happy and thankful that people from both chambers have visited prisons. We saw the governor visit a prison himself, and I think I have to go back to Jeb Bush to remember the last time that happened. So we're very grateful for everybody coming, looking at us and showing that they care about us. So where we are on the numbers, and by the way, me and Tammy Marcus, she's gonna speak for the probation office. We practiced our speech 5 times to keep it under 5 minutes. I think I'm gonna be able to do it. It's in God's hands with Tammy. I wanna just briefly tell you where we are. So we're very thankful for the amount of number that the governor has proposed. We would like to see a little bit more for the veterans and maybe kind of tinkle with the money. I told some people yesterday, unfortunately for this body, I learned the word sprinkle, but I would like to tinkle it and sprinkle it a little bit and just make it work a little better. For the last 2 years, the veteran officers have kept the prison system afloat. Some of you may have heard the former Secretary Mark Inch talk about it boiling over, and it was only for the current staff that he has that has kept the system from having an incident that would make national news. After this step is done, which is a very good step, a needed step, the pay of the newer officers and the veterans, in some cases, is only going to be a part, maybe 7 or 8 cents an hour. And one of our members of our negotiation team, we tested it the other day. She's an 8-year employee, a sergeant, and her pay raise would be about 7 cents an hour. So what we're asking is that you look at this, that you think of the veteran staff. I mean, in the last couple of years, I wish I could think of a word to describe what they went through, but they were going back to work actually with COVID, still having the results. They took it home to their family members. It was a tough scene. You can't social distance in a prison, and it's one of the biggest spreader of the disease in the country. Our other issue that we would like to see is recently this body had funded changes in shift hours. And what it did was, under the old policy, officers had every other weekends off. What we are asking for, what some other agencies have now done with their staff, is for a weekend differential to compensate the officers. And what you have is you have some officers, and in some professions where they, on the weekends, they're out with their families and loved ones and enjoying it. Well, the highest staff of the prison is during weekends because we also have visiting and other functions that go on. So we're asking that they be compensated for working from 6 p.m. on Friday to 6 p.m. on Saturday, an extra like 46 cents an hour to compensate them for that. And the last thing I want to talk about, and it's gotten for the first time, I've actually heard some House members and senators speak about this openly. We have part of our bargaining unit that is unique to any other law enforcement officer, probably in the country, definitely in the state. They're lieutenants, captains, senior supervisors, and senior probation officers. When they work overtime because of the current system, most of them are maxed out. They receive comp time, but there's a cap on that comp time. So about 90%, I know, of the corrections and lieutenants, when they work overtime, they work for free. They get zero compensation for this. And in all due respect, Chairman, I don't think we should ever see that in this line of work. They risk their life and not even get a dollar compensation. I believe that's wrong. I want to thank everybody for their time. It's so good to see everybody again. I wish that this panel just had the authority to wipe a wand. I would be happy. Again, I'd like to thank all the staffers also. I know we forget about them a lot sitting behind you. And I would also like to thank the staff at DMS for working with us. And I'm hoping that we're going to come to an agreement. With closing, I'd like to just give you a quote from the past chair that sat there, Senator Hooper, who said, that he wouldn't be a correctional officer for $1 million, and they sure make a lot less. Thank you very much.
Jimmy, thank you very much for coming forward. We appreciate it. I don't think you made 5 minutes, Jimmy, but Tammy has a chance to do it. Tammy, and we've got faith in Tammy that she can come in under, because James, you covered almost everything.
Correct.
Tammy Marcus.
And I even cut some of mine out just to make sure.
Well played, Tammy. It's like you know us. It's like you know us. You're from Fort Lauderdale.
I am.
And we appreciate you making the drive under the speed limit all the way here and to tell us the good news from your angle. You put wages on your car to talk about. Is that where we need a little extra attention, in your opinion?
Correct. Very much want to echo what Mr. Biardi said, but like I said, I'm not going to go over the fiscal numbers. I just want to explain a little bit about the role of the probation officers, because we don't make the news like the correctional officers do. I am the president of the probation officer chapter for the Florida PBA. I'm also a probation supervisor down in Fort Lauderdale, going on 31 years of service now. We have approximately 2,182 probation officer positions, and we are currently have a vacancy of 192 probation officer vacancies. State probation officers, they are required as a minimum requirement to have a 4-year college degree. They must also complete an extensive academy, a 562-hour academy, which includes classroom and high liability training. And this is under the guidance of the Criminal Justice Standards and Trainings Commission. Probation officers right now are supervising approximately 144,000 offenders under some form of community-based supervision in the state of Florida. Prior to COVID, that number was 167,000 offenders. Now, these probation officers are supervising sex offenders, career offenders, habitual offenders, violent felony offenders, offenders on conditional release from the prisons, house arrest supervision, drug offender probation, pretrial intervention, and they're also participants, offenders that are under drug court supervision, veterans court, and also mental health court. Some of the duties that a probation officer must perform, they conduct field home visits, so we go to their residence on a weekly or monthly basis, and this includes nights, weekends, and holidays. They perform curfew checks, and these curfew checks are typically court-ordered from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. They do searches at the offender's residence and often confiscate weapons, paraphernalia, drugs, stolen credit cards. And they often do these alone, these searches, curfew checks, and we don't go out doing our regular field supervision with law enforcement. They hook up offenders to electronic monitoring and ensure that they are complying with court orders from 67 counties in Florida and 50 states and 3 U.S. territories through interstate compact. And as a lot of people probably don't know this, as a fiscal responsibility, probation officers collect over $90 million annually in restitution, court costs, and fines. But with the starting salary of only $33,600, the Department of Corrections can no longer offer a competitive wage to hire and retain and keep officers to protect the communities that we serve. Matter of fact, it has only gone up about $8,000, the starting salary, in 30 years. This is inconceivable and a big problem to why we can't retain people, and that our vacancy rate now on the probation side is up to 29%. Officers, when they're leaving, they're not expressing that they don't like the job or it's too dangerous. It's the pay. They can't meet the needs, especially down in South Florida, as it was previously stated, they can't pay their bills. A lot of officers have second jobs just to stay and to make ends meet. Probation officers, as you've heard, provide an essential service to public safety, and they would like to be recognized and compensated due to their minimum qualifications they have to have and the duties that they perform in keeping our community safe. They deserve to be recognized in that law enforcement community and compensated as well. And to quote the great Dan Marino in a particular glove commercial, you have to take care of hands that take care of you. Thank you.
Tammy Marcus, well played. Thank you so much for coming forward. The question, Tammy Marcus, seeing we say thank you for coming forward.
Thank you.
And let us know. We appreciate the service that probation officers do for our state as well.
Thank you.
Is there any other business to come before the committee? Thank you all to the presenters. Thank you for the committee. We all got up early to be here. We appreciate the presenters. Everything's going to be taken under the advisement.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to have Ms. Larson come back up to the podium there.
Who is that?
From the DMS.
Ms. Larson?
Ms. Larson. Can she come up?
Now, she's waived the additional time. She put in another card to come back up, but you wish to ask?
Well, I have some questions. Yeah, and I want some clarification, and I feel that we only meet once. This is a problem that I have in collective bargaining committee. You meet once, you don't know what happens at the end. The unions come up here, and they tell you what they're looking at. We have in our committees the agencies coming up and telling us the need for wage increase, for attracting better workers and keeping their workers. And when I hear the question I asked Mr. Rambles was the contract services. In some of these areas of nursing and other areas, they're using money for contract services, which pay more than the ones who work there every day. And these are the questions that I have, because I feel somebody's got to, have an answer to that, because the money's being used for something else, and we're not keeping the workers. And year after year, look at probation. I had a friend of mine who was a cop in New York. He worked 4 years in Bradenton as a probation officer. College degree, the whole works. Background experience, the whole works. But look at how can you attract retired law enforcement officers who want to work in those fields, do investigations? That's my question, and that's how I feel that DMS has to say, what is the final product? They come up here today and they discuss the firefighters, the every year, same issue, equipment, what are they asking for? Not much. Look at the wildfires that raged throughout this country. And these guys, put their lives on the line. And that's what I'm looking at, and I feel that we just shouldn't just sit here. We should make sure that their issues are really heard, and DMS has to come up with an answer for us. That's it.
Very good. We are going to be losing a quorum. Miss, if you'd like to come, I worry because we open it all. We all, let me assure you, though, Senator Torres, I have been involved in some preliminary budget hearings, and the number one issue on the Senate negotiation or on the Senate side is wages. It's wages across the board for a variety of state workers, for correction officers, I think, is up at the very top. Florida Highway Patrol is also at the top. So attention is being given. We're all faced with rising prices and workforce shortages, and it's because of wages. And I think the department has heard you and heard those that have come forward. And I think that's a great place that we leave this meeting today. I want to encourage you to meet directly with them as they go forward. With that, there is any other business to come before us today? Hearing none, Representative Garrison moves we rise. Without objection, we stand adjourned. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great day, great weekend. We'll see you back on Monday.